Do you sometimes want to wake up to the singularity we once were? So compact, nobody needed a bed, or food, or money. Nobody hiding in the school bathroom, or home alone, pulling open the drawer where the pills are kept. For every atom belonging to me, as good belongs to you. Remember?
Good morning and welcome to Jonesy, the show that brings you conversations with some of the most interesting people in the world of books, podcasts, radio, theater, music, and humor, guaranteed to entertain and enlighten. I'm the host of Jonesy, Ken Jones. No relation, by the way. On today's episode, we welcome Kai Emmons, author of the new novels Unleashed from Dutton and Livid from Red Hen Press. Kai's a fiction writer, playwright, and screenwriter whose work includes the story collection Vanishing and the novels His Mother's Son, which won an Oregon Book Award for Fiction, The Stylist, Weather Woman, which was a Nautilus Book Award winner, and Sinking Islands, a sequel of sorts to Weather Woman. Her short fiction and essays have appeared in Triquarterly, Narrative, the Arts and Letters Journal of Contemporary Culture, Electric Literature, Lit Hub, and Portland Monthly. Before turning to fiction, Kai wrote for theater, film, and television. Two of her plays were produced in New York theaters. She's optioned numerous feature-length screenplays, and she wrote for the TV series The Trials of Rosie O'Neill. In the words of novelist Dan Shaan, Unleashed is deeply insightful about our current moment, the way we struggle to balance the quotidian conflicts of love and family with the apocalyptic thunderclouds ever growing over our heads. Kai Emmons has written a rich and moving book about the things that make life matter, even during the darkest times. I should mention that Kai was diagnosed with bulbar onset ALS last year, a disease that took away her ability to speak. So she'll be using a text-to-voice device called VoiceKeeper. Kai types in her responses, and we'll hear those through the device's synthesized voice. Please join us for our conversation with Kai Emmons, which is already in progress. Kai, thanks so much for joining us today.
I am delighted to be here.
And I'm delighted to be speaking with you. This is our fourth time, I think. We spoke for both of your Bronwyn Artair novels, Weather Woman and Sinking Islands, and then for the short story collection, Vanishing. But now we have Unleashed to talk about. I just loved reading it. In a recent blog post, you wrote, a little over a year ago, I was handed a new kind of deadline, a fatal ALS diagnosis. Some people, such as Stephen Hawking, live for decades, but for my kind of ALS, bulbar onset, the prognosis is bleaker. 2 years is average. At the time of the diagnosis, I had two recently completed novels ready to sell, and I'd begun writing a new novel. I entered the proverbial race against time. Now, those two completed novels, Unleashed and Livid, were both published this month. Can you tell us about bulbar onset ALS and how that affected you and your writing?
Livid was written well before I had any symptoms, but Unleashed was being written over the year, 2020, when I was gradually losing my voice, and I think that sense of loss and confusion creeps into the novel, though I had no diagnosis at the time.
Now, you started Unleashed at the beginning of the pandemic, you mentioned, early in 2020, so after Livid. In the book's author note, you write, I hurled myself into writing, feeling the strangeness of what I was working on, the likelihood it might never see the light of day. I didn't care. I had to write whatever this was, and it poured out like an opium-induced dream, which brings to mind Coleridge and how he wrote his famous poem, Kubla Khan. Was that opium-induced dream something you had ever experienced before for your other books and stories?
I think that is the state I always seek as a writer, the total immersion state we call flow, but it is elusive. The world wants to yank us out of the dream state.
Yes. Now, when we've talked before, you mentioned that several of your books were inspired by actual events. So climate change, clearly, for Weather Woman and Sinking Islands, school shootings for one of your early novels, His Mother's Son, and an event in your own life for the title story in the collection Vanishing. That was the early onset dementia of a longtime friend of yours. And I'm guessing the pandemic had an influence on Unleashed when you started writing. I mean, where were we in February, March of 2020? We didn't know what we were facing. And a lot of us were frightened.
Yes, I wasn't writing specifically about the pandemic, I think, but about the general chaos the world seemed to have sunk into, with bigotry and violence and hatred at large and the climate being eroded. So in the book, the characters feel a similar sense of being at sea in their lives.
Yes, that permeates the novel. I mean, think back to March, April 2020. Presidential election was coming up, probably one of the most important presidential elections in U.S. history. COVID, climate change, cops killing black people, riots, protests. I think you captured that in the novel as kind of the context. Now, you didn't know you had ALS at that time, but you write that the only physical sign was something going wrong with your voice. Quote, I couldn't control its inflections and it was sounding gruff, though no one noticed these changes but me. So it seems you had an awareness, almost a precognition, that something was off, even though neither you or the doctors you saw had any idea what that was?
I did. I knew something was seriously amiss, and I was trying to find out through my writing what it would mean for me to really become totally mute.
And of course, that's explored in the novel, even though you had a manuscript before, you knew for sure. Now, after you finished that first draft, and that was September 2020, you write that your voice was, quote, notably compromised by then. I had begun to sound to everyone's ears somewhat like an animal. As we'll talk about, being compared to an animal is not a bad thing in your work. And like an animal, you've said that instinct, which happens to be a central theme in Unleashed, took over the writing process in an even more heightened way than usual for you.
Yes. I left my left brain behind and wrote in the wild manner I wrote with when I was a child. It was very liberating, really.
Now, you were diagnosed with ALS on February 4th, 2021. That's the official diagnosis. That's when that came about. But months before then, after several revisions of Unleashed, you write that you had come to an understanding about the book. It was my body's chronicle of a developing disease, a metaphorical autobiography of sorts, though nothing about it borrowed anything from my actual life. My body was wiser than my conscious mind. What was that understanding like? It was kind of like you were working on something mysterious that was pouring out of you. Again, this right brain, this opium-induced dream. And you had this epiphany much later in the process. Hey, now it all makes sense.
Everything was going awry in my body, and so it is in the book. The characters' lives are falling apart, and at some point it seems so obvious that the book was my body speaking.
In retrospect, it's obvious. But you had that, again, that incredible intuition. Now, about two-thirds of the way through Unleash, you write of the main character, her name is Lou, which is short for Lupe. Speech, as you'd once known it, was evaporating. Now, the main character, we should mention, doesn't have ALS, but this line seems to be informed by your own experience. So as you were going through and revising, did you add this part, or was that part of the original plan?
I think that is the one truly autobiographical part of the book.
And you've said that, really, the story, other than that, is not autobiographical at all.
I wrote it as it was happening to me. But she does not become mute.
Oh, right. It's important to point out. But I don't want to reveal much more than that. There's some happenings, some events at the end, some twists that I think will delight readers. And I don't want to spoil that, the reading experience. But the main characters Unleashed, so we talked about Lou, her husband George, and they have a teenage daughter, Pippa. They communicate, as most of us do, primarily through speech. We might think that losing the ability to speak negatively affects our ability to communicate. But in the book, speech alone is not effective at all for Lou, George, and Pippa, especially in their communication with each other. It seems to result more in alienation than connection.
I think that is often the case with speech. We use it to fill silences, and sometimes to build walls, and sometimes to assert power. It isn't always to connect.
And we see that in the book, definitely. It fails this family. Now, in an interview you did with AuthorLink, you talked about how we as humans have limited perceptual capabilities, even more so when we're hit by illness and disease. And you play with this concept in the book, mainly through a character who teaches zoology at UCLA. The character's name was Professor Dar Mulligan. Now, he talks of creatures like lobsters, mole rats, salmon, and birds who navigate the Earth's magnetic field, marbled newts who can read the stars in the night sky, I did not know that, and animals like dogs with a heightened sense of smell, which I did know. So our human speech might not be all it's cracked up to be.
I think so. Once you learn about the incredible skills of so many animals, it becomes quite sobering about human capabilities.
That's why it was great to have the zoology professor in the book to kind of teach us all that. And I know you did the research on that. Now, going beyond speech, in a recent interview with Eugene Weekly, you said, I think the idea that the eyes are passages to the soul is always with me. I think about that with anyone I meet. And some of the most intense communication in the book takes place by looking into each other's eyes, especially powerful when verbal communication breaks down or is inadequate, or in the case of animals, verbal communication is not possible.
Yes. Years ago, when I was acting, we used to do an exercise of gazing into each other's eyes for minutes on end, and I learned then how much can be communicated simply by serious looking at another person's eyes.
Now, we talked about animals, and they play an important role in several of your books. In Weather Woman, there's an Arctic fox that talks to the main character, Bronwyn Artair, with a wise question, where are your people? In Livid, which is due for release next week, you write, animals are always more attuned than humans. And in Unleashed, the UCLA zoology professor says, someday the people who remain alive here on Earth, the last survivors of everything, fires and floods and wars and viruses, they'll find themselves wishing they were animals, I have no doubt. Now, I should also mention you quote Walt Whitman in Unleashed from Saga Myself, I think I could turn and live with animals, they are so placid and self-contained. It seems this love and admiration for animals and all living creatures runs throughout your work, preceding the ALS diagnosis.
I think I admire animals for being so much themselves all the time, not trying to remake themselves. Even though they prey on other animals, sometimes I see them as accepting their place in the natural order in the way humans do not.
And that brings up, there's a beautiful poem you used for the epigraph for Unleash. It's Marie Howe's poem Singularity, which is subtitled after Stephen Hawking, another very smart and talented human who lost the ability to speak due to ALS. Would that we could wake up to what we were when we were ocean and before that, to when sky was earth and animal was energy and rock was liquid and stars were space and space was not at all nothing. Before we came to believe humans were so important. Such beautiful lines. Why did you choose these? I mean, besides the reference to Stephen Hawking, why did you choose these lines from Marie Howe's poem for the epigraph?
It really spoke to me of human arrogance, and I was trying to address that arrogance in the book, something Lou and her daughter both come to see and revile.
I actually looked up the poem because I was kind of entranced by the lines you had for the epigraph. And you leave out the very next line after, before we came to believe humans were so important. That line is before this awful loneliness, which seems to be our fate as humans. I'm wondering why you didn't include that in the epigraph. My own thoughts are that the book itself is very much about that awful loneliness that seems such an integral part of Unleashed and maybe most of us as humans.
I wish I had included it, actually, but I was entranced by the line before. Maybe in the next parenting.
Well, I definitely urge people to look up the entire poem. It's beautifully written and really, really powerful, I think. Now, when we talked about your previous novels, Weather Woman and Sinking Islands, features main character Bronwyn Artair, who discovers she has the power to change the weather. You mentioned your extensive research on climate change and natural disasters. And you said it's the preeminent problem the entire world currently faces, and I think that becomes clearer and clearer every year now. Now, in Unleashed, there's a devastating wildfire brought on by a severe drought where Lou and George live in Northern California. It's become more common, especially here on the West Coast over the past few summers. You experienced one yourself, Kai, didn't you, near your home in Eugene last summer? And I think you had to evacuate for several days, taking shelter in a local high school. Did this experience work its way into the book, or did you write about Lou's experience with the wildfires before it hit you in Eugene? Another example, I guess, of precognition.
Yes. In early September of 2020, terrible wildfires hit close to Eugene, and some of my friends out on the Mackenzie River suffered terrible losses. But I had become obsessed before that when the Paradise Fire devastated a whole town in 2018, and I wrote the fire part of Unleashed before the fires here. Yes, another example of prescience.
Yes. Now, as awful as it sounds to be forced out of your home and take shelter, along with others, in a very public place like a high school, with little or no privacy, Lou, in the book, a character in the book, finds the positive in finding a sense of community in the shared experience. And that sense of community is so important in the story, maybe as a way of treating that awful loneliness mentioned in Marie Howe's poem.
I did not have to evacuate myself. I should clarify, but I do think that crises can remind us of the importance of community in important ways.
Now, Lou's husband, George, owns a winery in the book. George is in his late 50s, about 10 years older than Lou. The winery's in Sonoma County, where a lot of the best wineries in the country are. Very successful winery, has a beautiful home, owns a Mercedes and a Lexus, a large collection of art, including a Rothko painting valued at millions of dollars. And that consumerism defines him, but it's not very effective when disaster strikes. You write, as if a person by owning the right things could be saved. Definitely one of the themes of the book, and I think you contrast that with this sense of community. Consumerism tends to isolate us, while community tends to unite us.
Exactly. And I think this is what Lou realizes after the fire hits, how connections with people, and especially loved ones, is all that really matters. It is what this disease has taught me in spades.
You've called Unleashed a story about transformation, and you mentioned that your body was telling you something when you were losing your ability to speak. As part of your own personal transformation, you've said that some of your senses have become more powerful, and you're better at listening and taking in information. Quote, listening without speaking has made me feel like a human antenna, maybe a satellite dish, receiving information from so many quarters I ignored when I was talking. That's a wonderful metaphor. And some people might just stop at calling that adaptation, but for you, it's transformation. It's almost like taking a state and making it better through change. Again, the positive of what you're going through.
I think that I was a big talker before, and I often wanted to manage social situations. And now I have to let things go. And there is a gift in that, in not being in charge, in being an observer.
And that must help you quite a bit in your writing, just seeing more and being able to kind of digest that and turn that into your art.
Absolutely.
It plays a small part in the book, but it seems to be a central metaphor, a real-life example of transformation in Unleash. Pippa, I mentioned she's Lou and George's teenage daughter. She has a poster of Tiamat, the Dragon Lady, in her bedroom. You write that Pippa admired the Dragon Lady, who had been abused as a young person and had finally taken control of her life and was happier than ever. This seems to be a very positive type of transformation and self-transformation here, not through any disease or something, just through agency on the part of Tiamat. Can you tell us about the Dragon Lady and why you found this such a strong metaphor for several of the characters in Unleashed and maybe in your own life?
She really exists and is shocking to look at, as she is so tattooed and really has tried to remake herself as a dragon and as a woman. And I love the idea of coming to understand the agency and bravery of someone who is initially almost off-putting.
And she's taken a real negative in her life, her abuse as a young child, and turned it into a positive, taking control.
Yes.
Going back to your own transformation, how you've been transformed by ALS, you've said, it's really strange, this disease. It gives you so much time to think and see people you've loved. It's really hard not to arrive at a place of acceptance. I am happier in some ways than I've ever been in my life before. Almost a Zen realization, the secret to happiness is to live in the now, to accept things as they are. You say it's really hard not to arrive at that place of acceptance. I would think the opposite.
Many people who I've met with ALS feel this way, I think, though admittedly not all. There is not way to fight this disease as you might fight cancer, so the journey is a lot easier if you accept it.
Now, in Unleashed, the main character, Lou, finally recognizes the power she has after living mostly in the shadow of her husband and her, you know, raising her daughter in her role as a good wife and mother. This is not a supernatural power, say as in Weather Woman, where the main character, Bronwyn Artaire, finds she has the ability to change the weather. But that's a big theme in your work, women discovering their power, that seems to be of great interest to you. I think it's in almost everything you write.
I do think it is, and I think it is the path most women have to travel, some discovering their power sooner, some later, but it is so different for men, I think, having watched my son, who is 30 now, acting like an authority on things since he was 6 or 7.
I probably was the same way at 6 or 7, but he'll learn. We're not such authorities.
He used to make these declarations about things entirely wrong, but he said them with absolute certainty.
I can see a career in politics for him. Now, in addition to the theme of women discovering their power, which again is very important in your work, vanishing has also been a theme in your writing, and there was this short story collection, Vanishing. There was a sense of being ignored. There was one character who was overweight, so she felt people didn't see her for what she was. There was another character we mentioned who had this early onset of dementia. Her brain was going away. She felt she was vanishing. And in Unleashed itself, there's people who mysteriously disappear all across the globe. It seems vanishing, going away, seems a very human fear that no one notices us or cares about us and one day we'll be gone. That seems to be a fear that you try to work out in your fiction even before your ALS diagnosis. I mean, this is going back years.
Yes, it has interested me a lot, again, because I think many women feel invisible, but there is a flip side to it too. For a writer like me, I have often wanted to be invisible so I could observe others quietly.
So if you had, like, there's a common question, if you had just one superpower, what would it be? Would it be invisibility?
It might be.
I might also pick that one. Now, you're the subject of a documentary film by filmmaker Sandra Luco. It's currently in progress, and there are already a few clips up on YouTube, and I think Sandra's has some Kickstarter or Indiegogo, some crowdfunding to help finance the documentary. I was wondering how the film came about. I think you were first approached by Sandra with the idea.
She and I met online in a Zoom for our college early in the pandemic, and we met a few times while I still had my voice. And then, when she learned about my condition, she approached me, and I said yes, because I usually say yes to crazy things. And she came in June, meeting me face to face for the first time, and we love each other, and so it has gone from there.
Now, interesting, you went to film school, and you have a background before you got into writing books and stories. As a playwright and screenwriter. Was it UCLA Film School?
NYU.
NYU. I knew it was one of the most prestigious, and you had some pretty talented classmates.
Both of us went there.
And so she said that not only did you respond with what she called a resounding yes, all caps, but you also had a potential list of shots for the documentary. It's like it's going to make itself, huh? With you as the subject. You're the subject and also the assistant director.
I made a list of shots for her because I was afraid that shooting me writing would be horribly boring.
Do you have something in mind for what you'd like to see in the documentary? Maybe that you've talked over with Sandra and what you'd like viewers to take away from it once they see it?
Well, we both agree that we don't want it to be an ALS movie, so it may focus on my relationship with Paul, or possibly on what it has been like for her getting to know me when she knows I will be dying soon. In other words, it is for her a close confrontation with death.
And that's something we haven't even gone over in the interview, is mortality. Of course, it hangs over all of us. For people who have ALS, maybe a little bit more so, and it's really one of the themes of the book, too, of Unleashed. But we mentioned early in the conversation that not only do you have these two novels coming out at the same time, which is productive for any writer, Unleashed and Livid, but you're also working on a new novel, which you started before your ALS diagnosis. While you lost the ability to speak, you can still type, and I think you write longhand too, don't you, when you're composing the novels?
Yes.
I was wondering how the novel's going. I think the only thing I heard was you wanted to write a novel about evil, thinking, what a big subject, but certainly very relevant.
Yes, the subject is huge, and I have had to find a vessel for that in the form of a story, which took me some time to settle on. But I finished a draft, and Paul read it, and now I am revising things based on his comments. It is so great to have another project to focus on.
You've been enormously productive, and I just love your work. I want to thank you so much for talking with us today through the miracle of the text-to-voice device. And I hope I don't embarrass you by saying it, but you're an inspiration, both in your work and in your life. Thanks, Kai.
I love talking to you, as you are such a great close reader. Thank you.
Well, that's all for this episode of Jonesy here on KBOO Community Radio. If you missed any part of the show or would like to hear the longer, unexpurgated version, the director's cut, you might call it, if we had a director, you can listen anytime on demand at kboo.fm/program/Jonesy, Jonesy, or just search for it on the KBOO website. Before we head out the door, a big thank you to our guest today, Kai Emmons, author of the new novels Unleashed from Dutton and Livid from Red Hen Press. Kai will be reading tonight at Roundabout Books in Bend, Oregon, and at Portland's Annie Bloom Books on Thursday, October 6th, along with Kate Gale and Yuvi Zalko. You can find out more about Kai, her work, and all her upcoming events online at kaiemmonsauthor.com. That's Kai spelled C-A-I. Just a note that KBOO is your community radio station, and we get over 80% of our funding from our members. To support the station and programming like this, there's no better time to become a member yourself or renew your membership. Just go to kboo.fm and click on the big donate button. All of us here at the station, even Jonesy himself, thank you for that. Jonesy, by the way, comes to you every other week on the second and fourth Thursdays of the month from 11 to 11:30 a.m. Tune in for our next show on Thursday, October 13th at 11 a.m. I'm your host, Ken Jones, no relation, saying,
I think I could turn and live with animals. They are so placid and self-contained.